hopeless sinners who has hurt all mankind. Just a savior's own belief.
One love.
Robert Nesta Marley, Bob Marley, with One Love. It's from his 1977 album, Exodus, and became an international anthem for justice, peace, and love. The song initially was recorded in 1966 as a ska single by the Wailers, that was Marley's original group. But when Marley re-recorded it in 1977, he gave co-authorship credit to soul singer, gospel singer, musician Curtis Mayfield, whose message music inspired the reggae legend and many other artists throughout the world. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. Well, let's just do a little bit here of giving you an update on what's going on with Hurricane Maria. She has been really, really bearing down on the islands of the Caribbean and causing incredible amounts of damage. This is a huge, almost unprecedented storm. And the level of devastation, most everybody is saying they hadn't seen this any time before. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen before. It's just that perhaps it happened before we got there. But it's been a very trying time. And she is not done yet. She's heading after smashing into Puerto Rico and devastating Dominica. She is going to be heading on to other places, and we don't know where. Next, there is a curfew now in Puerto Rico because all electricity is gone, and the governor has warned that people shouldn't brave the floods, the floodwaters, and think that they could come out and do things there. They're not clear yet. There may be some things there that you can't see because the waters are a bit murky and it's dangerous to do it. But, you know, some people are saying, look, we got to find a way to get things to eat and drink. We have to sustain our lives. But right now with the curfew, even with the curfew, Puerto Rico is still trying to deal with the effects of the storm. It's really a major, major challenge for people, and our hearts go out to them. Very soon, I think we will be getting some more concrete information about where to send help and how to help as it becomes clear. But Puerto Rico and all of these islands, you know, that have Guadeloupe, as I said, small islands are totally devastated. In one case, as we know with Barbuda, there isn't a single living person on the island right now. So we do have to wait a little because even if you sent things, you know, the postal service is not working. You know, packages are not being delivered. People have moved away from their current addresses. The cell phone service is down. It's a rough situation. So have a little patience, and we will learn soon enough what's the best thing to do. We'll be informed what's the best thing to do. So until then, just be patient. And we'll have to be, they will have to be patient as well, as much as they're suffering, because people are all over the place. They have been moved into shelters, or they have moved with relatives and so forth. It's a confusing time, but it looks as if we would be hearing soon about what to do, what's the best thing to do. Meanwhile, in Mexico, there still is a mad scramble to see if they can find any survivors of the earthquake that hit on Tuesday night. We know that at least it has been confirmed that there are at least 275 people dead. That toll may or may not go up, but let's hope it doesn't. And the scramble is on to just try and find if there's anybody left in the buildings that have been searched, and if so, to get them out from under the rubble. So that's where we are. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to talk about your issues as you see them. And we'd love to hear from you. Let's see. I'm trying to... You know, my computer's been acting kind of weird lately, and I think it's trying to send me a message that the time has come to... But it's a fairly new unit. Maybe the problem is with, you know, who? Me. I can't operate these things as well as I should. But we proceed. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's just take the first call. You're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eatrice. Harvey from Berkeley here.
Hey, Harvey from Berkeley there.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. And I Googled, why is Kim Jong-un so mad with the USA? And an article came up, and the title was, What Happened in North Korea? Why Kim Jong-un is so angry with the USA, and it said that on June 25th, 1950, the Korean War began when the Korean People's Army under Kim's grandfather invaded the South, and the U.S. led a U.N. coalition to fight alongside South Korea while China and Russia gave their backing to North Korea. And during the course of the three-year war, the U.S. reportedly dropped 635,000 tons of explosives on North Korea, including 32,557 tons of napalm. And in 1988, an interview with General Curtis LeMay, who was the head of the Strategic Air Command during the Korean War, he spoke of the brutality. He said, we went over there and fought the war and eventually burned every town in North Korea. And over the period of 3 years or so, we killed off 20% of the population as direct casualties of war or from starvation and exposure. On both sides, millions of people were killed. And historian Bruce Cummings told Newsweek, most Americans are completely unaware that we destroyed more cities in North Korea than we did in Japan or Germany during World War II. And in his UN speech, Trump didn't mention global baking. And he's not really a leader. He and his administration are fully owned subsidiaries of the fossil fuel industry, and our true enemy at this time is global baking, causing our over the top use of fossil fuels. And we really need to. We really are the frogs in the pot. In the last 10 years, have been the hottest on recorded history, as the heat is being turned up. And since we don't have the real good leadership we need at this time of climate devastation, the hurricanes, the tornadoes, the massive flooding, out of control forest fires and long droughts, I think it's up to us to become leaders. And we have to lead our own way by divesting away from fossil fuels and reinvesting in clean renewable energy and a future that's sustainable for us, our children, and future generations. And if we can, try to buy an electric vehicle and put solar panels on our roof and plug our electric vehicles into our rooftops. And I say it really is time to get star powered, and now's the time, and let's get solar.
All right, thanks. By the way, they are going to just phase out these old-fashioned engines in another couple of years, and it will all be electrical, I guess. But we'll see. Thanks for calling in. You know, you raise a pretty interesting point, and that is, by no means am I defending Kim Jong-un or even his father, Kim Jong-il. The United States thinks that people have very short memories, and the atrocities committed against other countries somehow, you know, they would just fade away. People forget about them. But there are many, many countries whose cultures really encourage all of us to never forget. The United States cannot just continue to think that it can venture into other people's countries and do whatever you want to do and think there will be no consequences. There are cultures that say, if there's one person left, that person has the duty to avenge. This is what we don't pay attention to. We are so reckless. Like, for example, Vietnam. The Vietnam government, although in some cases is trying to, you know, be amenable and so forth, these people don't forget. The Japanese will never forget Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They just won't. And although we have a disposable nature, you know, we dispose of people and expect that they would dispose of the memory of the incredible violence done to them and other generations that they have witnessed. They didn't have to read about it. They witnessed it. They lived it. These things are not expunged from historical memory. So we always have to keep that in mind. This country is particularly guilty of believing, you know, in the old model, well, get over it. Yes, we're sorry it happened and so forth, but you caused it to happen in the first place. And in any event, it's behind us now. Move on. That is equally as odious as the act itself, to tell people to get over it and move on. So keep that in mind. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Dries. How are you doing today?
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm going to be kind of brief, but I just wanted to tell you that the other day, I didn't hang up on you. It was, I got caught up. Right after I spoke, it got caught up. So
oh.
I just want, okay,
no,
I just wanted to
put you hung up.
Okay.
But I was just so joyful about the fact that you nailed it. You nailed the answer. First person out and you nailed it. That was just so so much joy for me to hear.
But, you know, if you listen to the speech, especially people from Latin America, we remember what the United States had done in Latin America. And one of the things that he mentioned a few times, actually, the word sovereignty. he said that word, I think about three or four times when he was speaking. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that word and you think about Latin American, every time that Latin American get a government that is trying to help their own people, United States doesn't want people in those countries to live well and to have a good life. I mean, they either do a coup or they just assassinate, you know, they take them down. And we remember that. I mean, you go country after country, look what they're doing to Venezuela right now. And then you just go and go. And then they use the word socialism. But you know what? If you take a look at those white countries, European countries, especially the white one, they have a social medical system. They have a social system that United States never, never think about going after those countries. But any time that Latin America is trying to do better for their people in each country, I mean, one of the last one was Honduras. One of the things, the reason that they took Zelaya out was because he raised the minimum wage in Honduras, and that was it. So this is something that if you listen to that speech, every little point that he points out on that speech is what they have done, especially to Latin America. And then you take Africa, and that is another story completely. I mean, you take what they have done from starting from Libya. I mean, the guy had the best system, the best standard of living in Africa. And look what happened to him. So it's a speech that people, as dumb as he sounds at that dumb, I mean, whoever writes this speech for these people, it's about what they're doing around the world.
Why do you think he's using the word sovereignty as often as he did?
Because to me, the word he used, sovereignty, is like, oh, we have to help these people to get the sovereignty. Oh, if they don't, one of the examples, the perfect example, is about Venezuela. And he has done, I mean, these people had elected Maduro. Good or bad, they have elected, and they have the best voting system in Latin America, including the United States of America. And then when he used that word, the meaning of that word, it's like we have to give it back to the people. But it's not back to the people. It's back to the white population of those countries. Let me tell you, I went to Bolivia, and I was in Bolivia for more than 2 weeks. And I stayed in one hotel that when you see who serves you are the native. And the people that they serve, they get served, are the white Bolivians who they don't want Morales. So you tell me, who are the people that they really deserve those land? And then you go on and on, especially you don't even have to go to Africa. You don't have to go to all the country. You just have to take a look at the Western Hemisphere and look at the side of this world. What is happening in each country? And why the United States of America? And why are people out here? And we know that because the system that they have created in those countries, that people have to leave and run here. I don't know what else to say.
The reason he's using this word, and he's using it to communicate to his political base, because that's how they see America now. It's a fight for the sovereignty, white sovereignty, mm-hmm. is being threatened. So he uses this word repeatedly to communicate to his base that he's responding to this feeling among them, and he shares it, and he will defend it because they are at one with each other. They believe America is being attacked by people who shouldn't be here. They just shouldn't be here. So our very sovereignty, he's saying to his political base, our sovereignty, although, you know, if you look at history, you laugh at the word because the way he means it is not really, in fact, it is totally the opposite of historical record. They violated people's sovereignty. That's how they got here in the first place. I mean, kill them off. So when he talks about sovereignty, we should always remember that he's talking about recent notions of sovereignty. And those recent notions of sovereignty have to do with the threats of non-white people, as they see it now, undermining the supremacy of whites. And that's what he's talking about. Okay. Thanks for calling, Ali. Great to hear from you. Mahat, you're on the air.
Hotep,
you say there.
Me? Yes, hi. It's so always good to hear your strong voice.
Thank you.
Greetings to the beloved family.
I
want to play a little bit of catch up, even as I'm fading away here, because it was a program. I don't know whether it was Friday. I wanted to call, but I said I'm too tired until I heard Marie, I believe it was, who mentioned about the police officer in Georgia who stops a white woman. And I just want to flesh that out a little bit more, and won't get her ID because she insists she's seen too many videos where police shoot people. So this police officer, he was not making a joke. Go to that audio, Utrice. This guy mentioned several times basically trying to, in fact, the chief or somebody responding said, oh, he was just trying to calm down the situation with her. That was the official response. But he said things like, he mentioned it several times about, we only shoot black people. Didn't you notice in the videos that you're referring to that those are only black people? And then he said it again and probably again. So he wasn't doing it as a joke. It happened a year ago. The video just came out, and they did fire that police officer, and he got to have the last word in saying that he was retiring, you know. But as that was happening, and as you were talking that day about the situation with police, in so many cases, it's hard to keep up. We had just had a case in the Bronx. Somebody is always interested in how the person who's trying to help with a wellness check, I think it was the landlord in this instance, had a young man who was having some sort of a mental episode huddled in the corner. And the police never think to back out of the situation. You know, supposedly with the knife, they're not really in danger if they back out. Plus, there's all their taser. But instead of backing out, I heard this guy from Long Island call on NPR and tried to justify that, well, if he had committed suicide, we would have been blessed. That's crazy. They didn't back out, and they shot him to death. So, you know, and I just want to thank Ethan and the brother's name. I can't remember.
Probably Nasheed.
Right. They made some very good points. Ethan was right on because we don't believe our lying eyes. So all the media, all the analysts, they don't see. And the woman in the video says to the police that Freddie Gray was in need of medical attention. They had seen him beaten up, and he couldn't plant his feet nor lift up his head because his spine was already broken. So the DA went along with the black guy, the driver was at fault, and the two white officers who beat Freddie Gray to breaking his spine, you know, his neck, a great extent, weren't even to be properly charged. So that's what I want to say about that. Now, lastly, I listened to yesterday's program on phone podcast, which I really appreciate. Don't forget to mention, because that'll bring some people in. And when you miss a program, sometimes you can catch it. So the one on the African so-called working lunch, first of all, I have to respond to your charge that Trump was speaking to them at a fifth grade level. The problem is the total vocabulary of Trump is at the four. He's got 400 words.
He wasn't going out of his way then.
Exactly. That's part of the problem. That's whoever he's talking to. The 400 words that he uses around and a wrap and behind and in front, that's the extent of it. You remember how you shared the video or audio where he's bragging about not having read a book,
that
he could recall? And then I don't know whether it was a joke, but on Saturday Night Live, they showed his Bible that he swore on still in his wrappings.
That was something else. That was something else. And it really deserves a major, major complaint, because there were so many faux pas committed there. How do you shove a whole bunch of people who happen to be heads of state? You just shove them into a little room.
Where was that held, by the way? Because you knew about
Palace Hotel.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just say this, because I've heard some great comments earlier, but the fact that H.R. McMaster, he's surrounded by military and generals, where it would, the tradition, I mean, he even had to have a waiver, some of these people. The fact that he's sitting down with African heads of state, and he's also, you said the Secretary of State was he didn't have anything to say. Did I understand that correctly?
Nothing. He was just introduced. McMaster took on the role of, you know, the MC, as it were. And he
said,
next to the president is General Kelly.
And what it says is it said that the facade is being off. And whether he realized it consciously or unconsciously, because that's what happens in Africa, you know, the military control, the false flags, the creation of conflicts that the bankers fund both sides. And also, I guess that whether conscious or unconscious, the fact that the military played such a prominent role over the Secretary of State, that tells us, like, was it Henry that said rape and plunder? And lastly, Henry said something so important around the police unions, because that is virtually, those are criminal organizations. They need to be taken to court under RICO, you know, because they basically promote and put forward their atrocious policy. So that's my last thought. I love you. I love the family, and I'll continue to listen.
Thank you. And I'm glad that you were able to get your call in today. Thank you. Michelle from Cali, you're on the air.
Hey, Yutrice.
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me, Yutrice?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We're hearing you.
Okay. I just want to start with, I am not very educated and articulate, but I am very aware of and very well connected to what's going on in the world. And right now, the biggest issue we have right now is a lack of awareness. It's urgent that people need to be aware that, I know all he called many times, he's talking about climate change and fossil fuel. We are not at that stage anymore. We are at the stage of geoengineering. And these people, there's a documentary called Owning the Weather. These people are making the weather. They are creating all these hurricanes. As a matter of fact, Michio Kaku is on YouTube, he's on CBS talking about it, how since the Vietnam War that the government has been using weather manipulation for war. At this moment, we are using it for warfare against the countries who are our enemies. And China is doing it, Russia is doing it, but the United States is doing it even bigger, to the point where they're doing it right now for forced migration, and they're doing it also for gentrification and for reconstruction, and they're doing it for the stock market. It's all connected to all these agendas that they have. And people,
could you explain just a little bit? Could you explain just a little bit, to your understanding, what is happening with this control of weather? How is it working?
I don't know if you, for the past 10 years, have been listening to a show on WBAI called In Other News with Jeff Brady, where he explained in detail how it happened. Like every day, since that moment, I heard that program, I'm never the same again. I look at the sky every day. I've been everywhere in the world. You can see these planes spraying all this white stuff in the sky. They are making circles. They are making X's. They are dimming the sky. They are putting a blanket on the sky. You never see a blue sky again without these big, thick clouds. And all these lines, they are made of barium, aluminum oxide, aerosol, nanoparticles. It's like seven different chemicals. And it explains why we have everything is an epidemic now, asthma, Alzheimer. I mean, everybody has heavy metal poisoning in their body. And nobody's paying attention because the media is controlled by these same people. 95% of the media is controlled. But if you go on YouTube, as a matter of fact, on PRN, there is a show every Saturday called Global News Alert with Dan Wigginton. And he has a bunch of whistleblowers like ex-CIA agents, NASA scientists in his program talking about the subject. And he has 3,000 documents stating the fact that the government is doing it. Michio Kaku is saying it. The CIA, that guy, that ex-CIA director, he's on YouTube saying, yes, we're spraying the stuff, but we're not doing it. We're only doing it for global warming. We're only doing it for climate change. And it's not true. It's called geoengineering. It's called climate engineering. They engineered the weather. Don't you see there's not one person left in Barbuda Island? There are not too many people left in Dominica. They destroy all these places. And did you see what happened to New Orleans? It's bought up by big corporations. It's a touristic area. They push these people to Houston. 60% of these people were renting. All these people left. They never came back again. So now I'm looking on CNN, and I'm seeing commercial, touristic commercial they're doing for hotel, for the culture of New Orleans. And you have all these black people, artists, and people with the food, you know, Creole food, and serving all these white people coming. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's going to get worse. And there's a website that same Dan Wigginton, who is on PRN on Saturdays at 2 o'clock, he has a website called geoengineeringwatch.org, where he has all the videos, all the whistleblowers, all the information. Everything is factual. Everything is based on fact. There's no speculation. There's no conspiracy theory or anything like that. By the way, when the earthquake happened in Haiti, killing 200,000 people, what happened next? 2 days later, you see the Clinton and Bush Foundation. It was an agenda. They created that earthquake, and they created a foundation to steal all the money that will come towards the people, where there is not one house. Haiti look worse than before the earthquake. None of these billions of dollars went to do anything in this country. They stole all the money. And the other day in Houston, you see all the president, all the Bush, Clinton, putting together raising money for Houston people. I'm sure this money is not going to this. So there's a bigger picture on your tweet. It's a warfare. It's a warfare on the people right now of the world. And these people are so greedy, they are willing to do anything. They are willing to kill anyone. They are displacing people. And when you try to create awareness, people go against me. When I'm trying to create awareness based on fact, there are so many movies on YouTube. There is one that's called What in the World Are They Spraying? And why they are doing it. If you have look at what they did to Cuba. They destroy the tobacco there. They destroy all the sugarcane fields. They destroy everything in Dominica Island. They have the forest there that was so green. The agriculture. They destroy
Dominica
everything
was one of the for an island that small. Its relevance to feeding the Caribbean was extremely important. A small island like that, so fertile, and that was one of the things that they took such great pride in, that they took care of the land, and it allowed, especially during the war years, it allowed this small little island to feed practically much of the Caribbean.
Yes, and they were big on export of the agriculture. You know, if you look at the history of Haiti, these people, they are around a round table creating agenda that can create misery for poor people, for black people. We don't represent anything to these people. And until people open their eyes and their heart and see what's going on, and the first thing people will say to me, oh, it's conspiracy. Whenever somebody's telling me conspiracy, I consider you as an ignorant person. I am not educated. I never been to college, but I'm extremely passionate about information and anything that can make a difference in people's lives, health, and environment.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something. You are quite educated. You're very educated.
I don't think so.
And it shows because you are investing in the knowledge that you gain. And that's the best kind of education there is. In fact, it might
Thank
have
you.
Been a good idea that you didn't go to college, because you probably would not have known.
I know.
What you
do. I know.
So thank you so much for calling
you know,
in and encouraging us to really pay attention. This is an issue. I discussed it recently in the sense of Puerto Rico. Just before, it's so ironic, just before the storm, I talked about the tactic being used all over where our communities are, where the real estate is so valuable, as we saw in Detroit, as we're seeing in Flint. They use all kinds of methods to just get people out. In Puerto Rico, they forced Puerto Rico into bankruptcy. And the last comment I made, I was kind of angry that day, but the courts were busy entertaining the proposals of the real estate industry and the debtors and insurance companies and whatnot. And they basically are trying to figure out how to carve up Puerto Rico. And there wasn't a single Puerto Rican in the court. So these things are happening, and we have to get wiser and wiser about them. And I'm so glad that you gave us this other wake-up call, and hopefully we will pay attention now when we
settle down a bit. And I hope people on Saturday on PRN Saturday at 2 p.m. every Saturday. Dan Wigginton, he's very passionate about what he's doing. His information are 100% accurate. He can back them up with anything people want. And he always tell you that you don't believe him, just go and check the fact. So
absolutely.
And his website is geoengineeringwatch.org. Okay. Thank you for giving me that opportunity, Yotris. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle, for your call. We go to Brooklyn. David, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon to everyone.
Hello. Good afternoon, David.
And, you know, I don't know where to start. There's so much on the table here that should be talked about. You know, first thing that comes to my mind is that in the Caribbean, a lot of those islands, to me, they seem like they're not going to be viable anymore. And I know that many of them depend heavily on the remittances of people who have left those islands and gone to the UK, the US, or Canada, or France, or somewhere, just to survive. I remember going to some islands, and I would see people queuing up at the port to get their barrels that came in to help them have food and whatnot. So I'm just wondering about that, if some of those islands will survive as is, or they're going to have to do things to have a safety relief valve of letting more people off those islands and come to some of the more developed countries. Now, with respect to President Trump and his speech at the United Nations, it sounded like the king talking to his subjects, the world population. You know, the king is addressing the subjects. That's the way I looked at it. And
that's the way it was.
Yeah, you know, so and with respect to his quote-unquote working luncheon, I had a couple things I was wondering about. That's a group of officials that he invited, was this just the ones that showed up, or did he invite everybody from the UN to come? What was going through my mind as I heard about that was what he wanted from these people. For example, when you are involved with imperialism like the United States, and you have a resource place like Africa, a high resource place, you want certain things. I know that means that you either want them for nothing or a very small price. For nothing would be like what is going on in the Democratic Republic of the Congo right now, where they are extracting things from the Congo, minerals and so forth, and some of the things that you use in your cell phone, and flying them out, flying planes in from places like Uganda, and then flying them out and putting them on ships and taking them all over the world to Europe especially and the United States. And many of these other countries, they have valuable resources, minerals, and mostly natural resources, I guess some human resources too, that they want to exploit. And as we know from the work by Brother John Perkins, the Confessions of Economic Hitman, the way the game is played, the way the very important game is played, they get to these people who are prime ministers or presidents, and they explain to them that they want, they're going to do certain things, and they would like to have certain resources, and we're going to have some contracts to let you do certain things here and improve your infrastructure to help the country, but we want you to play the game with us, so your family will be very wealthy. But if you don't play the game, we got the jackals for you. So those African leaders know about this.
The first thing that Trump wanted to do was to basically dismantle Barack Obama's initiative, which he didn't quite fulfill yet. But Barack Obama had attempted to do exactly the same thing. He called people to Washington. I don't know if you recall, there was a big thing about that, and I did a report on that. So anything Obama does, I mean, this man is psychotically obsessed with Barack Obama and destroying any semblance of a suggestion that he was actually president of the United States. Mm-hmm. He's busy undoing everything Obama's had attempted to do and, in fact, in some cases, had accomplished. But this, you know, you call up a bunch of people. There were 9 heads of state of the 54. So, you know, that poses a question right there. He even invented an African country called Namibia. He was thanking the president of Namibia for being
rather than Namibia.
Mm-hmm. But what I drew attention to yesterday was, here's a president saying, you know, this is his attempt now to forge some kind of a meaningful relationship, because after all, Africa was where his friends went to get rich. And, you know, it was one of those things, like an old joke, and you hear ba-da-dum-dum, and then it's dead silence. No. Nobody was laughing at that joke. But anyway, when you do, there were so many things committed there that were wrong. So many things were so wrong. Mm-hmm. He passed up and passed over his own Secretary of State and said to everybody assembled that he will be sending the ambassador to the United Nations, what's her name? Haley.
Nikki Haley.
Yeah. That she would be the one. Now, when you say that out loud as a president, basically you're saying you're firing your guy. What? Tillerson.
You know, I got a comment about that. This is what came to mind when he did that. When he said that, it reminded me of Kim Jong-un, who assassinates people that he doesn't want to be around him anymore in leadership positions, with an anti-aircraft gun in public. And that, to me, sounded like a near assassination of the Secretary of State. That's the way I looked at it.
Sometime next week, we should expect Tillerson's resignation, because I don't know how he could put up with something so just outrageous. That outrageous conduct by his boss is ridiculous. But the African representatives of the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, they came prepared. They made Trump look so stupid with his almost like a kind of spur of the moment thinking. But these people had a plan. These people had things they wanted to talk about, specifics. And I can guarantee you Trump is not interested in talking about their points, which would be the basis for having any relationship with the United States. Mm-hmm. Because they have choices. They have China. They have India. They have a whole bunch of people to choose from to do business. So the United States is not the one-stop shop that it thinks it is, and that you can't, in this world today, you have no choice. Mm-hmm. You know, they really smacked him down. It was very nicely done.
Yeah, they have other choices, like China is a big player in this game, and they're making tremendous inroads in those countries, and they're coming at these countries in a different way. And I think most of those countries are accepting the Chinese approach. So Chinese are very smart in that respect. And a Chinese nation has another advantage. They're not wasting as much money on military expenditures. You know, we have all these bases and nearly $1 trillion in budget for military and whatnot, and they have less. So they're taking advantage of the situation in Africa and around the world to make inroads, and I wouldn't be surprised if soon they'll have the largest economy in the world ahead of the United States.
Well, one hopes. And the thing was that it was just such an abysmal thing to see. I mean, from the smallest thing, it showed that nobody took care and nobody paid attention. How do you look how, I mean, it was way over the top, but look how Saudi Arabia received the president and his wife. I mean, that was really over the top. But when people understand diplomacy and what you have to do to impress, especially when you're looking for money or trade deals or whatever it is, you do want to show a certain amount of care in how you're receiving the people that you're going to be coming to for some business. Mm-hmm. It looked like the only thing missing was a linoleum tablecloth. You know, mm-hmm. Put a linoleum tablecloth and the kind of, you know, the church cafeteria would have. Mm-hmm. No, you don't do that. You don't put people to sit in those uncomfortable chairs. You don't scrunch them together. And the way they did it, it was a kind of L-shaped formation in which the U.S., the president and his people were on one side of the L and everybody else scrunched on the other side of the L. Now, come mm-hmm. on. Somebody, I mean, you don't have anybody who could tell you that that was tacky, very, very mm-hmm. tacky. And if you were receiving a good friend, you would try to make a better impression, let alone heads of state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was just so awful. The whole thing was awful. And then there is Trump proving to the world that he's now managed by the military, managed by the generals. McMaster has no business being there at all. He is the in charge of national security. What is he doing there?
Mm-hmm.
He had no meaningful role. He should not have been there. Mm-hmm. That should have been the role of the hooligan, the ambassador to the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, introduce people and so forth. And then there's Tillerson, who was just introduced, and we never heard from him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird.
It was really tacky. The whole thing was tacky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we're dealing with tacky chief executive, so that's what we get.
Yeah, we're dealing with a tacky chief executive.
Right.
And for once, you would think that he could find somebody black at the Exim Bank or other people somewhere who might be interacting at this level. No, mm-hmm. not even Omarosa was there. So she's fired,
oh,
too.
Oh, boy. Yes. So that's quite a situation. So
when you look at the little things, you know what I mean? These are the little things that tell you a lot of what is going on in that White House and in that alleged mind of his.
Yes. Well, the last thing I wanted to mention, I don't know how we're doing on time here, but you see, some people are more important than others. For example, I recently had a conversation with someone, and they were telling me about what happened to people during the Second World War with the German genocide of people in Europe with Jewish people, Roma people, and it also includes black Germans. People aren't usually aware that there were many African Germans living there, and the Germans did all kinds of things to them too, including rounding up the children and taking these children and doing operations on them to keep them sterile and things like that. And this person told me all about that, and I listened. But after she went through her talk about that, that was very interesting, and I thanked her. Then I started to talk about what had happened to African people who were kidnapped and brought over to this country and were enslaved. So essentially, what rang the bell to me today was that she got into the get over it mode that you mentioned early in the program. Yeah. In other words, what she was talking about as far as her talk was important, but what I was saying was, you know, get over that. That was long ago. And essentially, it wasn't that long ago, but, you know, she wasn't interested in hearing about that aspect of oppression at all.
Well, that happens, because what she was actually saying is not really about the historical events necessarily, but her estimation of the value of the individuals. In her estimation, certain people had greater value. So what happened to them is of greater value. You don't give much thought to people who have no value. You see, you were talking to her about people who, in her eyes, really didn't have very much value. So, you know, we're all sad and everything, and it shouldn't have happened, and blah, 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 and they race through that narrative. But the bottom line is they don't see black people as having equivalent value. Their people have value. So you could talk about it a lot. Talk about what happened. I asked Elie Wiesel to his face on television, would he consider, or did he consider, the slaughter of indigenous people in the United States to be genocide? And he said no. I almost fell out of my chair. This world-renowned activist and humanitarian and all of that still could not see the parallel there. And he refused to recognize it. He said, no, what happened to the Native Americans was not genocide. What happened to the slaves was not genocide. And he didn't even blink an eye. So I say that to explain the attitude that you encountered, because you were assuming that genocide is genocide. It doesn't have any particular race attached to it, in a sense. The idea is to exterminate people. And certainly, if you are in the business of recognizing the extermination of people as being a horrific act, you should recognize all genocides. But that's not the way it happens. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you all for calling in and contributing so meaningfully as you always do. I thank you for that. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always a great, great program. You can reach me via email at leadstories@gmail.com. Have yourselves a good weekend. Hang out with some people who bring positive dimension to your life. And we see each other Monday. Bye-bye.